Some of the views expressed on the Mormon Channel are solely for the education and inspiration of our audience and may not represent the official position of the Church.
We welcome you again to the Mormon Channel to our program Past Impressions, where we study the important people, places, events, and key issues associated with the history of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. I'm Brent Topp, your host. I'm the chair of the Department of Church History and Doctrine at Brigham Young University. And today, as we continue talking about Nauvoo, is one of our best experts on Nauvoo and a historian with the Joseph Smith Papers Project, Brother Alex Smith, a historian with the Church History Department here in Salt Lake City. Alex, we're glad to have you with us on Past Impressions today.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Alex, today we're going to talk about something that's very, very important and very, very interesting in helping us to understand what we understand about Nauvoo. That sounds kind of strange, but in order for us to understand anything, to really know what we think we know, we have to have some records that we can study and learn from. And so we want to talk today about Nauvoo record keeping and what it means to us. So why don't you tell us a little bit about the types of records that we have from this Nauvoo period of time, and then what do we know about those sources, and how is it maybe different than other periods in church history? Tell us about the Nauvoo records.
Certainly. In previous periods of church history, if anything, we usually end up with a paucity of documents that are available for understanding the events. We often wring our hands wishing that we could have a source, a letter, mm-hmm. a journal entry mm-hmm. that would explain some of the very significant events in earlier periods of church history. But in Nauvoo, we have both a wonderful blessing and a little bit of a challenge in ending up with a very large number of contemporary records. For a historian, it's a wonderful problem to have, if you mm-hmm. will.
Yeah, sure is.
We end up sometimes with competing and conflicting sources then describing the same events that we have to work our way through. But the number and types of documents available for Nauvoo is simply astounding. We have printed materials, newspapers published by the saints and others in the area, diaries, correspondence, legal papers, sermon accounts. We have church corporate records, some of which I'll try to talk about in a little more detail further on, but in the form of temple committee records, church tithing books, Nauvoo House Association records, and things like that. Numerous sources, the majority of which we have housed in the Church History Library today, and of course some with the Community of Christ repository and in the hands of private owners as well, but a great number of significant and helpful sources providing students of church history with a wealth of primary contemporary sources from which to study
wow.
this period.
You know, and also numerous private journals, personal journals from people. You're absolutely right. It is a wonderful, wonderful collection. We talk about church records and journals and historical documents being so relevant to our understanding of church history. And some of our listeners may think, well, why in the world would you want to have a whole episode of Past Impressions on the Mormon Channel talking just about church records or record keeping in Nauvoo? So why would we devote an entire program to just historical records?
Well, as a Mormon people, record keeping is important to us today, and this arguably had its genesis in Nauvoo. Both Mormon and non-Mormon historians recognize that that the significance of histories and and of records in Mormonism is unique. You know, if you look at other religious traditions and the number of available records for studying early Mormon history, and particularly this Nauvoo era, is does set us apart from other religions. Jan Shipps, you know, a non-Mormon, has often recognized this in her writing and has remarked on Mormon record keeping as a distinguishing feature of Mormonism. To go even further, English historian Douglas Davies, in his book The Mormon Culture of Salvation, actually argues that Mormon historians have, to a certain extent, filled the role of theologians in other religions by safeguarding or interpreting Mormon history, the foundational events of which are a basis for our belief as Mormons. So we have this unique position of our understanding of the gospel, our testimony of the restoration, of particular events in the restoration being central to our identity of who we are as Mormons. And so by nature, then, the records that we have of that early period take on a whole new significance. And also the emphasis by Joseph Smith and other church leaders on record keeping elevates that subject to essentially the level of event. Record keeping and discourse about record keeping becomes as significant to Nauvoo as other Nauvoo subjects, as the building of the temple, as construction in the area, as commerce, as relations with non-members. Record keeping itself becomes an event.
Absolutely. And as you pointed out, to the Latter-day Saints, it is a sacred duty, and we were mandated by revelation to keep those records. Why don't you tell us now about the kinds of records that were available to us now, and historians and members of the church and others that are interested in studying the history of the church in Nauvoo. What do we have, and why is that so important?
Let me preface my response by saying that a few minutes ago I mentioned that in previous periods of church history, we didn't always have as many records available to us, but probably for no period is that more true than during the immediate arrival in the area of commerce, what would become Nauvoo. Because of the violence of the expulsion of the saints from Missouri and the events surrounding that, and they're trying to find a place to stay in Illinois, that the period from the winter of 1838-39 through 1840 and even some of 41 becomes one of the, in terms of documents and sources, one of the darkest periods that we have in church history in terms of an absence of documents. But part of that being the effect of two of Joseph Smith's primary clerks at the time, James Mulholland and Robert B. Thompson, both dying, you know, during this period and leaving for a time a little gap in the record keeping. And then Joseph Smith, of course, goes on his trip back to Washington to try to appeal to the federal government for the crimes that have been committed against the saints in Missouri. And during that trip, he asked Robert Foster to keep a record. And if Foster did, it's no longer extant. But anyway, so during this time, we have a lack of records, but then in December of 1841, well, really the end of 1841, we end up with a couple developments. The same day that Robert Foster dies, the 27th of August, 1841, we have William Phelps appointed as an assistant church historian and recorder. And so clearly there's a need to have someone filling that role of church recorder. But then in December, Joseph asks Willard Richards, apostle, to become his private secretary and historian and also the recorder for the temple. And so with Willard Richards, we begin Joseph's own personal journal, which I'll talk about a little bit later in more depth, but also a number of other church records that become available. In September of 1842, to jump forward for just a minute and talk about some important types of records, in September of 1842, while Joseph Smith is in hiding for a short time, efforts are being made to extradite him back to Missouri. He writes two letters to the saints in Nauvoo that we now have canonized as sections 127 and 128, the Doctrine and Covenants. They talk about the need for having a church, a general church clerk, and for recording baptisms for the dead, for instance, in particular, it talks about, but also local records being kept and the need to have recorders in the church and their relationship with the general church clerk. So we end up, one of the types of records we end up with in Nauvoo are the corporate records, the baptismal records, the tithing record books. For instance, the tithing was supposed to be entered in a book called the Book of the Law of the Lord. And in the Brigham Young and the 12 were given responsibilities for collecting tithing, but then wrote a letter saying that the book would eventually be kept in the temple. It was kept in the red brick store for most of the Nauvoo period, and it was required that tithing be entered there. And these tithing records in Nauvoo, of course, become a wonderful social history. The types of things mm-hmm. people donate to the church, you find anything from German dictionaries to pencils to a dog to to copies of the Book of Mormon. Mm-hmm. But they anything that the often poor saints could donate to the church, they did in addition to labor, of course, and things like that. But those records become an important social history for us. And also, those records were used at the time, just as our donation and tithing status is a requirement of temple attendance today. It was also at the time. Joseph, in a 7 March 1844 sermon, said that in relation to those who give property on the temple, be careful into whose hands it comes, that it may be entered into the church books, that those whose names are found in the church books shall have the first claim in that house, meaning the temple. Mm-hmm. I intend to keep the door at the dedication myself, and not a man shall pass who has not paid his bonus. Of course, he dies before the temple is completed and the saints move in. But there is this real understanding that this record is significant. But then we also other corporate records. We have the Nauvoo High Council records. We have Joseph Smith revelation accounts. We have Joseph as trustee. We have his land books, which include invaluable information about the location of residence so that people can go back and find where their ancestors lived. Conference reports, etc. Some other types of records that we can that we'll talk about in a little later. A few other types of records that we have from the period are related to Joseph Smith's own teachings and his understanding of doctrine and of the scriptures. Much of what we know about Joseph's understanding of the gospel comes from this period. We recognize and often talk about how most of his revelations that are now in the Doctrine and Covenants were received during the earlier mm-hmm. years of the church.
The New York and Ohio period, yeah.
Certainly. But when we move into Nauvoo, we have fewer recorded revelations that end up being canonized, though certainly there are some, and some very significant ones. And Joseph's receiving of revelations is, of course, still important to him. For instance, just as a little tangent, in October of 1842, when Willard Riches, Joseph's clerk, is back east on a trip, Joseph appoints William Clayton the recorder for the temple in his stead. And Clayton notes in his history of the Nauvoo Temple that one of the things that Joseph asks him to do is, as temple recorder, is to record Joseph Smith's revelations when he has them. So it still sees this, the need to record these. Mm-hmm. But unlike the revelations and not having as many of those recorded during this Nauvoo period, what we do have are the vast majority of Joseph's recorded sermons mm-hmm. and so his public discourses. So, for instance, we know of over roughly 250 sermons that we know Joseph gave during his lifetime. We only have even partial record of roughly one-fifth of that, mm-hmm. but almost all of those are from the Nauvoo period. Mm-hmm. And so if we want to know, well, how did Joseph interpret, you know, passages of the Book of Revelation or mm-hmm. you know, other scriptures, we're far more likely to find those in conference reports and records from the Nauvoo period than from any other time during his life.
Great. And though we may not have the same number of canonized revelations, it is critical because this is a time of great doctrinal development and of amplifying or expounding upon the doctrine. So we cannot underestimate the significance of those sermon records, absolutely. As we talk about the saints living in Nauvoo and in New York and in Ohio and Missouri, they were really in close proximity with their non-Mormon neighbors, and that certainly caused the friction and ultimately they're having to leave those areas. Now we have the saints in Nauvoo living more or less by themselves. They're a little bit more secluded in that way, a more permanent settlement, if you'd say. What happens when now that all changes and the saints find out that they're not even going to be able to stay in Nauvoo and they're going to have to leave Nauvoo? What happens now to church records? So you have a period of instability in Missouri, period of peace and stability in Nauvoo, and then all of a sudden instability all over again. How does that affect record keeping and what we have available to us?
Ironically, the saints being forced from Nauvoo was a little bit of a blessing from purely the perspective of talking about available records, because we have this very unique situation in which essentially an entire city of people move, you know, and I don't want to imply, I think far too often in the church we emphasize that the church left. Well, certainly a lot of good members of the church the Mormon experience remained behind. But having said that, obviously the majority of saints did move west in the Exodus. And when they did, they took the majority of the not only the church records, which you would assume, which had always been carried by the churches they left from one area and moved to another, but not only the church records, but also the municipal records. And this mm-hmm. is, I'm not familiar with many other instances in U.S. history where we have, for instance, the city council minutes and proceedings uh-huh. of a municipality moving and ending up residing in a private collection uh-huh. in another state, yeah. you know, and what that does is gives us access to those records that we have here. For instance, you know, the city court records, the municipal court and mayor's court records, the city council records, all of these now available here in the church archives in Salt Lake is a marvelous resource, in addition to censuses, you know, conducted by both the state and the church in Nauvoo.
That is quite fascinating. I'm glad you brought that up, is that most all of us, when we do historical research, whether it be for family history or academic work or other kinds of things, we go to the cities, we go to the counties. But that's very, very fascinating that all of those records came with the saints. So if we want to have a good understanding of some of the municipal records of Nauvoo, we don't necessarily have to go to Hancock County Historical Society in Carthage, as much as they have great stuff. We come to Salt Lake. That is a very fascinating insight. So one of the things that I find really, really fascinating, and both with sermons and the doctrinal significance of the records, is that much of what we have, a wide variety of things, comes from newspapers. Why don't you talk a little bit about what we have with regards to a newspaper culture and what role that plays in our understanding of history?
At the time, access to information from the rest of the country and even from surrounding areas in Illinois was largely relegated to just newspapers in this print culture that you talk about. And this was the way the saints would receive information about what was going on around in the world around them. And that was evident by journal entries, for instance, that talk about members of the church reading from papers or the Nauvoo City papers publishing articles, copying articles from other cities. But it also formed the church's official publication, The Times and Seasons, originally edited by Joseph's brother Don Carlos until his early death, and then also Ebenezer Robinson. Later, the Quorum of the Twelve purchases The Times and Seasons, and under Joseph's direction for a while as general editor, but mostly with John Taylor, Wilford Woodruff, and to a lesser extent William Phelps assisting, The Times and Seasons becomes the official organ of the church. But then we also have the WASP, later renamed the Nauvoo Neighbor, edited by Joseph's brother William Smith, which is a much more secular paper, still carrying church information, but also responding to recent events in the area, local politics, and things like that. But between these two papers, we have a great resource in understanding what life in Nauvoo was like, what the relationships of the Mormons with their neighbors was, and things like that. Of course, the WASP and Nauvoo, later Nauvoo Neighbor in particular, becomes an important venue, medium, if you will, for dialoguing with the non-Mormons in other parts of Illinois, and even, you could argue, a catalyst for some of the animosity and later downfall of the relations between the Mormons of their neighbors. But the political battles, John C. Bennett's accusations against Joseph and the church, all of these being published in these papers, along with important conference reports from Nauvoo and other areas, and really, of course, the advertisements provide a wonderful insight, opportunity for learning insights into the culture of the area.
Why don't you talk about another significant source of church history for us, and that is from personal journals, and what role do they play in our understanding of the Nauvoo period, and how do they help us today?
Personal journals are one of the greatest resources that we have for understanding this period, and there are a few particularly significant ones that I'll mention in just a moment. But journals of all of the church members form a great foundation by which to, in many cases, check the facts, the events that we're interested in, the stories that we're trying to ferret out during this period in church history. For instance, if we read something in one record, we can often go back and check, well, who was around, who would have been involved in this in interaction, who would have been part of this land purchase, or who might have recorded this sermon by Joseph, things like that. In particular, the journals of Wilford Woodruff, William Clayton, Willard Richards, Eliza Snow, and others who were centrally located, who had an opportunity to converse in some cases daily with Joseph Smith and other church leaders, and are invaluable for understanding this period of church history. I would like to talk for just a moment, if you don't mind, in particular about Joseph Smith's own journal-keeping effort.
And I wouldn't want it any other way, especially since that's your special area of expertise with the Papers Project. So by all means.
Thank you. And if you don't mind, I'll jump far earlier to preface this with a little discussion of the beginning of Joseph's journal keeping and what he understood, what kind of record he understood his journal to be. So on the 27th of November, 1832, in a letter to William W. Phelps, a portion of which is later canonized as Section 85 of the Doctrine and Covenants, I'll just read a little section of it, of the first two verses. It is the duty of the Lord's clerk, whom he has appointed, to keep a history and a general church record of all things that transpire in Zion, and of all those who consecrate properties and receive inheritances legally from the bishop, and also their manner of their life, their faith and works. And so in this same letter to William Phelps, in a portion that doesn't become canonized, Joseph complains about his own inability to write, mm-hmm. and says, talks about a crooked, broken, scattered, and imperfect language, you know, and, mm-hmm. Which certainly he's a great orator, and he speaks well, and arguably I think the letter is a wonderful example of writing. But anyway, writes to Phelps that in spite of his own inability to write, a record, a history of the church does need to be kept. And so this what we now consider in a way, message revelation coming only a couple years after the organization of the church in November 27th shows that very early on, keeping a record and keeping these corporate records that we later talk about in Nauvoo is of significance to Joseph Smith. And that same day that Joseph writes this letter to Phelps about the duty of the Lord's clerk in keeping of this record, Joseph buys his first journal and writes in it this note on the first page. He writes, Joseph Smith Jr.'s Book 4 record, bought on the 27th of November, 1832, for the purpose to keep a minute account of all things that come under my observation. So if you notice, very similar to the directive that he's just explained to Phelps that's now in mm-hmm. Section 85 of keeping a history of all things that transpire in Zion. You know, everything mm-hmm. that comes under my observation. Well, when we move into the Nauvoo period, Joseph Smith, I think I mentioned earlier, with the deaths of Robert Thompson and James Mulholland, both previous keepers of Joseph's journal, at least for a time, Joseph renews this effort to keep a journal. And while his journal is kept sporadically during the 1830s, by the time he asks Willard Richards to keep it in December 1841, from then on, we move into a very consistent journal keeping effort that remains there, you know, for the duration of the prophet's life, and becomes a record that is foundational to our understanding of the history of the church during that period. From the 13th of December, 1841, when Willard Richards writes Joseph's first Nauvoo journal, he did have one kept by Mulholland early in Commerce in 39, but a very brief one. But from the first real Nauvoo entry on the 13th of December, 41, through the right up until the week before his death, we have almost daily entries mm-hmm. describing his activities and events. And it's clear from reading that record that Joseph intends it to be as much of an organizational history as a personal journal. Mm-hmm. You know, we usually think of a journal as something we write ourselves, and I'm sure my own journal would be more continuous, more comprehensive if I asked clerks to keep it for me. But it, Joseph does end up with this arrangement whereby a record is kept, and he doesn't often even consult it by the end of his life, only infrequently ask Richards, you know, to look at it so that he can see what kinds of things have been noted. But in doing so, it becomes essentially the backbone of the later history of the church and a resource for understanding the history. Richards and William Clayton, Eliza Snow, and Erastus Darby are the four clerks who keep Joseph's journal in Nauvoo. And they note things about his coming and going. They copy in correspondence. They at times include extensive notes about court cases that Joseph sits mm-hmm. over, you know, showing us important things, not only about the development of the church and its doctrines, but also life in Nauvoo, Joseph Smith's understanding of the law, his involvement in politics, his, you know, describing his 1844 presidential campaign, all sorts of various topics that we really only come to know as thoroughly as we do because of his understanding of how significant a personal journal would be and this history of the church. You know, they're related to the journal. He keeps he starts the History of the Church project, publishing it serially in the Times and Seasons. And, of course, that becomes the original backbone, later continued in Utah, of the now published seven-volume History of the Church, by from which we have much of our information from the period. But really, his own emphasis on record keeping is the reason that we have such a wonderful body of primary sources from this period.
Well, I am so personally grateful, and I think the church is collectively grateful for the incredible number of records that we have that help us to understand the Nauvoo period. Alex, thank you so much for being our guest. I'm sure we will hear from you again in future episodes as we talk about what we learn from those historical records about the significance of Nauvoo. So thank you again for being here.
Thank you.
We hope you'll join us again in the future on Past Impressions on the Mormon Channel of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. I'm your host, Brent Topp, saying goodbye till next time.